This episode of the Children's Literature Podcast is brought to you by A Nice Chicken Dinner. A nice chicken dinner. Maybe nice if you're the fox, but if you're the chicken... Welcome to the Children's Literature Podcast. I'm your host, TQ Townsend. This episode is about Chanticleer and the fox. Before we get going, I have to say the last week or two has had some good book drama.
Book drama!
This might be the first and last segment of book drama, as a show about children's books and how to teach children doesn't usually have much going on in the way of current events. But I was asked to weigh in on the Willy Wonka-themed event that happened in Glasgow, Scotland. Basically, it appears to have been an unauthorized pop-up experience in a warehouse. The website for the event used a bunch of AI imagery to advertise, which should have told people this was dodgy. The advertising claimed that children would really experience what it was like inside the Wonka factory. As I'm sure most of my listeners are aware, the event was a fiasco, run by a company of, let's just say, dubious credibility. It was mostly an empty room, with a few actors in pretty sad costumes, and each of the kids got, like, one jelly bean. Yeah, no chocolate. The guy in charge got told off by some very angry mothers, after which he ran away to hide, and apparently refunds will be issued. Over on my Instagram account, I made a brief response to a listener who asked what I thought of all this. And basically, I don't see how this can have any effect on the book Charlie and the Chocolate Factory or Roald Dahl's legacy. The day was definitely unfortunate. A lot of kids were disappointed and their parents felt ripped off by the steep admission price. But nobody died. It was just a disappointing entertainment experience. Other than feeling bad for the poor kids who were disappointed, the only thing that did cause me concern was how unkind the internet was to the poor actors who got roped into this whole thing. None of them realized that they were involved in a scammy event until it was too late. They had signed contracts promising to work, and they knew that backing out would mean not only being unprofessional, but letting down the kids who were attending. By all accounts, the actors did the very best they could under the circumstances, and they deserve credit for following through on a commitment. They do not deserve the personal abuse they received from commentators criticizing their looks or saying that they looked like they were Oompa Loompas on drugs. When people do something ridiculous, by all means criticize the ridiculous things and the bad actions. But perhaps let's all remember not to be pointlessly cruel to people who haven't done anything wrong. And that concludes the first and maybe last segment of book drama on the show.
Book drama!
We'll see if it becomes a regular feature. A few weeks ago, I talked about The Fox and the Crow, which is one of Aesop's fables. This tale is one of the most enduring ancient stories, and it's been told, retold, and reinterpreted through the centuries. This week, I'll be talking about one of this fable's great-great-great-great-grandchildren, Chanticleer and the Fox, a beautifully illustrated book by Barbara Cooney, which was published in 1958 and won the Caldecott Medal for Best Illustrated Book of the Year. Aesop's fables stayed popular all the way through the Middle Ages, and about 1,000 years ago in France, The Fox and the Crow inspired a series of French tales about a fox named Renard. These stories were so popular that the old French word for fox, goupil, came to be replaced, and today the French word for fox is just Renard. Renard is an archetypal fox, crafty, sly, and intelligent, and in the medieval stories he was often the enemy of Chanticleer, a rooster whose name means sings out in a clear voice. By the 14th century, the stories had reached England, and an insignificant little poet by the name of, Geoffrey Chaucer, included it in a little-known work by the name of The Canterbury Tales. The Canterbury Tales is a collection of stories told by characters who are on a road trip, and each story is named after the character who tells it. The story of Chanticleer and the Fox is told by a priest who serves an important nun, so it's called The Nun's Priest's Tale. In the story, a cocky rooster that belongs to a hard-working widow is flattered by a fox, who says he's a huge fan of the rooster's singing. The sly fox tricks the rooster into closing his eyes and stretching out his neck, saying, "This will make the song so much prettier." When the rooster falls for this ruse, the fox grabs him and almost gets away with a nice chicken dinner. But the rooster thinks quickly and tells the fox that he should taunt the widow who's chasing after them. Eager to show off, the fox begins to speak, but this gives the rooster the chance to slip away and save his own life. Chaucer's telling of the story is very funny. There are these lengthy digressions where the rooster and his wife talk about important people from history and the bits of wisdom they left behind. The humor comes from the fact that these are a couple of chickens, and their pompous, overeducated conversation is ridiculous. Such creatures wouldn't even know about ancient philosophers, let alone be able to debate their writings. And with a little bit of effort, modern readers, even teenagers, can decipher Chaucer's poetry, which is written in Middle English. As beautiful as the original poetry is, though, translations are really helpful in making old texts more accessible to modern readers. In 1948, a young professor named Robert Lumiansky did a superb prose translation of the Canterbury Tales. There are a lot of different translations out there, and each translator had to make different choices. Some try to keep the rhythm and rhyme of the original poetry, but this is really hard to do without straying from the meaning of the original words. On the other hand, if a translator writes in prose, it's possible to show modern readers exactly what the original author meant, but that does come at the cost of Chaucer's poetic patterns. Lumiansky's prose translation of the Canterbury Tales is the best one I've ever read. It's a shame that it's out of print because it's simple, clear, and perfectly understandable to modern readers. You can find it online and in many university libraries, but I wish it was more widely available because I think it would be a perfect way to introduce medieval literature to teenagers. Barbara Cooney used Lumiansky's text to create Chanticleer and the Fox. The full version of the story is a bit long for kids, so Cooney trimmed it down to just the main plot with the rooster and the fox. The abridgment is tightly focused and perfect for an illustrated book. My only complaint is that Robert Lumiansky isn't given credit on the cover or title page of the book. His name only appears in very small print on the copyright page. It makes sense for the book to state on the cover that Chanticleer and the Fox comes from Geoffrey Chaucer's Canterbury Tales, but I feel that as the creator of this excellent prose translation, Lumiansky should have been given credit as well. Anyway, Chanticleer and the Fox isn't just a modern abridgment of a historically famous tale. I also think this illustrated book counts as a work of historical fiction, and this is thanks to the thoughtful, detailed pictures that accurately depict life in 14th century England. When you read Chanticleer and the Fox with your kids, you can present it as a book that does not contain any anachronisms. Kids will understand this vocabulary word better if you break it down into its meaning. Anna is a Greek prefix that means against, and chronos means time. So anachronism means something that goes against the time period being depicted. It's really common to see anachronisms in supposed works of historic fiction. Food and clothing are often depicted incorrectly, and even the words used by characters are often too modern. This is dangerous because it pollutes readers' understanding of what did and didn't exist in history. Anachronism can work when it's done on purpose in a work of fantasy or comedy. The Sword in the Stone by T.H. White has a lot of anachronisms, but they're in there as obvious jokes, and readers are not going to be misled by them. Chanticleer and the Fox gets an A+ when it comes to its depiction of the past. Barbara Cooney not only very carefully included things that we know were part of everyday life in the Middle Ages, but she's also been careful to exclude anything that's too modern. The very first page of the story starts off right. The widow and her two daughters wear simple but accurately drawn 14th century clothing. Each of them has on a long T-shaped tunic. The children go barefoot, which was common back then during times of good weather. Shoes were made entirely of natural leather back then, and they wore out quickly. If you wore your shoes every day, they might last you a month. So unless parents were wealthy, they would have their children go barefoot whenever they could. Shoes would need to be worn on a walk into town or to go to church on Sundays, but on a nice summer day at home, like the first picture shows, kids would have been just fine going without. The widow is wearing more layers than her children. She has a sleeveless surcoat and an apron, which are sensible working clothes that protect her main gown from getting dirty or ripped. She would have only had a few items of clothing, so it was important to take care of them. The outer layers would have kept the undergown clean enough to wear when she needed to go to church or the market. The widow has a wimple on her head. This is a linen cloth that's wrapped around the head and neck. In medieval Europe, married women covered their hair when out in public. Wimples were also very practical work clothing. They kept the hair safe from dirt and the face safe from the sun. The linen cloth would have also wicked sweat away from the body and hair. Even after a long day of farm work, the widow's head and hair would have been extremely clean, and it was much easier to wash the wimple every day than to fetch enough water for a shampoo. The widow's house is also historically accurate. It's a half-timber structure with a thatched roof. This style of building uses wooden beams to make an open frame, which was then filled in with boards or woven sticks. Everything was then covered over with a mixture of mud and poo and whitewashed. The thatched roof was usually made of wheat straw, the stalk left behind after grain is harvested. This is an example of how in the Middle Ages, nothing went to waste. After the edible parts of crops were collected, the inedible parts were used for all kinds of things, making baskets, to freshen up animals' stables, to stuff mattresses, and to make roofs for cottages like the one in Chanticleer and the Fox. Even the plants are historically accurate. My favorite thing about Barbacuni's illustrations is that it's very easy to recognize exact species of plant that are native to England. The story is set before the Age of Exploration, so very few exotic species would have been present in England at this time. The Romans introduced cherry trees to Britain, and Cooney drew one growing next to the widow's beehives. But many other plants that are popular in British gardens today would not have been there in the 14th century. Cooney includes native wild strawberries, which are smaller than modern commercial hybrids, as well as native English iris, oxeye daisies, nettles, cornflowers, borage, and English oak. Every plant in the book belongs here, and had the pictures included species like tulips, hydrangea, or wisteria, young readers would have been misled about what 14th century England looked like. Even the technology used in daily life is portrayed correctly. Household items would have been mostly made at home from plant and animal parts. Things made of metal would have been rare and expensive. Only a few precious things, like the widow's three-legged cooking pot, would have been bought from an ironmonger. The wattle fence around the widow's house would have been a very common sight in the 14th century, and was made by driving posts into the ground and then weaving flexible branches from hazel or willow trees around them. These fences were sturdy, easy to make, and kept livestock in while keeping predators out. A view of the inside of the house shows you what common kitchen items medieval people had. On the table you see a handy knife, but no forks. These weren't used at mealtimes in England until about 400 years after the time of Chanticleer and the Fox. Other things on the table, like the jug, plate, and cups, will be familiar enough, but children will probably not recognize the salt cellar sitting in the middle of the table. Salt and other seasonings were expensive luxury items in the Middle Ages, and a beautiful salt cellar would have been a precious item to the family in this story. At mealtimes, the salt cellar was placed in front of the most important person at the table, giving first dibs to expensive seasoning in a beautiful container. The view of the kitchen also shows how medieval people kept food from spoiling. Hanging above the widow's hearth are some sausage links and a side of ham. There weren't refrigerators back then, so people would hang cured meats up over the fireplace. The smoke would drift up and keep the meat from spoiling and make it pretty tasty. Today we know that smoking kills bacteria and seals the surface of cured meats, allowing them to last longer. The amount of care and thought that went into this book is astounding. Every page of Chanticleer and the Fox offers something for children to explore, and students of all ages can use this book to learn about everyday life in medieval England. Historical fiction doesn't just come with the words on the page. It can also come with the images. Kids can find out why the beehives or skeps look so different from modern box-shaped beehives, Or they can make an apron that looks like the widow's by gathering fabric at the waist and holding it in place with a pattern of decorative X-shaped stitches using brightly colored thread. You can make your own miniature wattle fence by driving quilt pins into a foam base and winding yarn through them as if they were willow sticks. Kids can learn more about the engineering that went into medieval houses, or the effect that smoking has on microbes that cause meat to spoil. You can use the pictures in the book to plan your own medieval flower garden, choosing only species that would have been common in Geoffrey Chaucer's time. Chanticleer and the Fox is a wonderful story with vivid color and a simple, timeless plot. People from any period in history can understand the struggle for survival and the battle of wits that takes place every day between animals, and sometimes human beings. This story has been handed down through the generations as a literary heirloom, and each of us can take part in that heritage by telling, retelling, and remaking it over and over again. I've had the presumption to retell this story myself. Longtime listeners will know that I'm a fan of retelling stories as if they were Westerns. I love Westerns. Louis L'Amour novels, spaghetti Western films, Kurosawa films, classic Hollywood Westerns like High Noon, modern parodies like Blazing Saddles and The Three Amigos. I love all of it, and a remarkable number of stories from all over the world fit quite well in a Western setting. So I've recorded a new descendant of Aesop's fable about the fox and the crow. It's based on the nun's priest tale by Geoffrey Chaucer, and is a fuller version of the story that Barbara Cooney used to write Chanticleer and the Fox. I'll release it as a bonus episode after this show goes out. Please do let me know what you think of it, and tell me if you or your kids try creating your own version of this tale. You've been listening to the Children's Literature Podcast. Please subscribe and give the show a rating. Send comments to letters@childrensliteraturepodcast.com. I'm your host, TQ Townsend. Thanks for listening.